So today, Mr. Ace, His Grace Rasikendra Prabhu. So I would like to hand over the call to Preeti Vasi Mataji to give Prabhuji's introduction. So Mataji, please.
Rasikendra Prabhu hasn't joined yet, so we'll just wait for another minute.
Okay, Mataji.
Gia, you can stop.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, thank you all so much for joining, and thank you so much, Rasikendra Prabhu, for gracing us with your association today. It's a big fortune for us to have you on the call. So I would like to read an introduction about Rasikendra Prabhu before we give the call to him. Rasikendra Prabhu and his wife, they were Indian immigrants in Singapore, and Rasikendra Prabhu became exposed to Srila Prabhupada's book when he was about 12 years old, after his elder sister purchased the Bhagavad Gita as it is, and an entire set of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Rasikendra Prabhu came to Texas in December 1991 to pursue his graduate studies in engineering at the University of Texas at Arlington. Shortly thereafter, he met devotees for the first time in the university campus, and encouraged by the saintly association of these devotees from the Dallas ISKCON temple, he developed friendship with them, and he started chanting and frequently visiting the temple. And that's when he met his spiritual master, Srila Taman Krishna Goswami, in 1992. Then he moved into the Dallas devotee community in 1994, and he received his first initiation in Dallas in January 1995, and received his Brahminical initiation in Houston during May 1996. He has a PhD in aerospace engineering, and Rasikendra Prabhu was employed as a faculty there. He and his wife, Haraduri Mataji, they moved to Houston in March 2006, and his daughter, Tamal Priya, was born in 2008. So at present, Rasikendra Prabhu works as an engineer, and he resides with his family close to the Houston ISKCON Temple, and he's got multiple services, very wonderful services at the temple, and he's one of the strongest pillars of the Houston temple. So we are very, very fortunate to have such a wonderful personality with us on the call today. Prabhuji, I hand over the call to you.
Thank you for the very overly generous introduction. So I feel very fortunate here to be in the midst of the devotees again, who are giving me an opportunity for my own benefit to speak about Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami here in this specific part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I believe I've got 45 minutes. We'll stop at 10:45 and then Houston time. Any questions, comments, any corrections, any chastisement, please be very willing to share that. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So today we'll speak from the Matya Leela, Chapter 20, text 103. The chapter is entitled, The Lord Instructs Sanatan Goswami. Some background here. Sanatan Goswami, after escaping from prison, through the grace of his younger brother, Rupa Goswami, I mean, we can call it grace even though it was the youngest brother, because he was the one who, by some coded poetry, informed Sanatan Goswami that Mahaprabhu will be in Varanasi, and then we can meet. So meanwhile, he bribed the prison guard with 7,000 gold coins, and then he took flight with his servant Ishan, who had secretly kept 8 gold coins. So while in a kind of a halfway house in a hotel there, he, not really a hotel, but you can call it a, he met somebody, some landlord there, who's one of his associates, who was a very expert, a palmist, or astrologer, source. He knew that Sanatan Goswami, his servant, had in possession 8 gold coins, and then they wanted to actually kill Sanatan Goswami to get that money. But Sanatan Goswami was kind of suspicious. Why is this person so nice and kind to me? You know, I'm looking like a mendicant here. So he revealed, so he'll give you these coins, please take me through this hilly terrain to Varanasi. So then the person agreed, and he sent some of his guards to accompany Sanatan Goswami to the hilly track. So, and then eventually he reached Chandrasekhar's, Mahaprabhu's associate in Varanasi, there, to his residence. So this conversation starts there, and Mahaprabhu says there's a great Vaishnava is arrived, Chandrasekhar. Go and bring that person in. So, and then Chandrasekhar Acharya goes out, and he sees there's no Vaishnava here. He comes back and tells Mahaprabhu, "This, I don't see any Vaishnava here. Who are you talking about, my lord?" He said, "There is." So then Mahaprabhu goes out, and let's see, did Mahaprabhu go out or he? So Mahaprabhu meets Sanatan Goswami and he embraces him. So it was kind of puzzling, why is Mahaprabhu embracing this so-called he looks like a very dirty and very unkept person here. And kind of the devotees were wondering, who's this person here? You know, Mahaprabhu is showing so much regard, so much affection. And then Mahaprabhu said, this is a great devotee of Krishna who has arrived. And then Mahaprabhu, and Tapan Mishra is also there. Tapan Mishra is another associate of Mahaprabhu, where Mahaprabhu was taking his meals at Tapan Mishra's home. Then Mahaprabhu tells, well, I met your two brothers, Sanatan and Anupam, and I sent them to Vrindavan. And so Mahaprabhu inquires about him, how did he escape the prison, and Sanatan Goswami tells what happened. So meanwhile, Sanatan Goswami, Mahaprabhu tells that please tell Chandrasekhar, make Sanatan Goswami look like a gentleman, because meanwhile now Sanatan Goswami has not shaved for many days, and He was wearing old clothes, but he had this very expensive woolen blanket he had on top of him, which his brother-in-law had given him on the way. He met his brother-in-law. So, and then Chandrasekhar offers him some new garments, but Sanatana Goswami declines it. And he says, give me some old cloak. He declines it. He says, I'm supposed to be a renunciant, but I cannot accept this. But he was still wearing that woolen blanket when he came back after his shower. And then Mahaprabhu was kind of occasionally glancing at the blanket. And Sanatana Goswami did get an idea that Mahaprabhu didn't want him to have that expensive woolen blanket on him, because he's supposed to have given up everything. And Sanatana Goswami was still wearing that. And then when Sanatana Goswami but he was still wearing that, and then he went to the river, and then he saw another person had a very old piece of cloth, and he exchanged this with this devotee, and then he came back to see Mahaprabhu without just like a complete renunciation. And Mahaprabhu became very, very happy, very glad that Sanatana Goswami understood his mind, and he had now, externally it seems, of course internally he's always renounced, that he had given up that the expensive woolen blanket. So this is indicative of something, that sometimes we carry, because Sanatana Goswami is always liberated. But in our case, it's indicative that we may try to become more renounced and try to give up something. But internally, we hold on to something which we don't want to surrender to Krishna. And that could become a great obstacle in our process of devotional service. That we are able to give up things which may not matter to us. You know, what may matter to me may not matter to you. So for me, my big education may matter to me. For somebody else, their job may be very important to them. They may not want to give it up. Somebody may want to give up easily, you know, their money, but they may not want to give up their prestige. Some people may want to give up their so-called prestige, but they not want to give up the attachment to family. So each one of us have attachments which we are very, very closely guard and dear and don't want to give up. So this is an indicative that in order to fully receive Mahaprabhu, I'm hearing some noise in the background. In order to fully receive Mahaprabhu's mercy, which is actually Krishna's mercy, because if you receive Mahaprabhu's mercy, it's no different than receiving Krishna's mercy. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. So, so Mahaprabhu tells Sanatana Goswami, I've already deliberately considered this matter. Since Lord Krishna is very merciful, he has nullified your attachment for material things. Why should Krishna allow you to maintain a last bit of material attachment? After vanquishing a disease, a good physician does not allow any of this disease to remain. So, Mahaprabhu becomes very pleased now, and then Sanatana Goswami, Mahaprabhu asks, Mahaprabhu tells Sanatana Goswami about, now he starts talking about Krishna very intimately. So sometimes we find that a disciple may be in the vicinity of the spiritual master, but may not have access to the heart of the spiritual master. Prabhupada gives the example of a fly. He may be sitting on the king's lap, but he may be simply a nuisance for the king. Whereas a viceroy, a minister, may be very far from the king physically, but he must be doing very sincere service. And the king is very intimately connected with that person. So a physical proximity is typically not the qualification to enter into the heart of the spiritual master, to understand his mind. So like that, Rupa Goswami was sent to Vrindavan, very far from Puri. But we consider Srila Rupa Goswami as the, we give him the highest regard in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, even though he was so far from Mahaprabhu physically, but he understood the mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, he is given the highest adoration in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya among all our acharyas. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. During Srila Prabhupada's time, there was a disciple who was serving Srila Prabhupada, and he asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, do you feel separation from your spiritual master? And then Prabhupada replied very gravely, it's not for you to know if I'm feeling separation from my spiritual master. Of course, it was a very dumb question to ask. The way it was asked itself is very foolish, because since when Srila Prabhupada never feels separation from the spiritual master? So I was listening to a class, so my spiritual master was telling, so if this devotee was very intimately connected with Srila Prabhupada, he would have understand naturally that Prabhupada's heart. But because he was not, he was trying to present this question to try to get into Prabhupada's heart. Therefore, he had no access to Srila Prabhupada's heart. So, and Sanatan Goswami, now in this episode of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we really get an indication how to receive the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's a very, very instructive part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Sanatan Goswami, who is the embodiment, in fact, Mahaprabhu very openly has said many times that Sanatan is my most favorite devotee. I mean, Sanatan Goswami actually purchased Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, you may think, how could somebody purchase Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? He purchased Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by few things. By his profound and deep and genuine humility. And we have to understand, Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami and Anupam, they were very, very scholarly. They were born in a very, very exalted Brahminical family, the Saraswat Brahmin, from Karnataka. Their family reigns from Karnataka originally, and they settled in Bengal. And they are from the Saraswat Brahmins, very, very cultured family. But somehow or other, by providence, they became engaged in the service of the Muslim Nawab Shah. So therefore, the Brahminical community had ostracized them, because once you start associating with Muslims, you are practically considered untouchable. Of course, nowadays, if you consider that, now we are all considered untouchable, because we are practically associating in our work with people who are womanizers, who are meat eaters, who are drunkards. But this is something which most of us don't have much choice. But doesn't mean you physically associate with them, you actually associate with your consciousness. You can associate physically with somebody, but may not associate with your consciousness. So we have to be very careful when we associate. We have to be friendly to those people. We have to show mercy, but we should never get polluted by your consciousness. That means you can't let them, their consciousness affect you. So we should never compromise our principles in the association of such people. At the same time, somehow or other, we should try to show our mercy to them. And if you have, we have such an attitude, Krishna will protect us. Because Krishna will see, well, this devotee, even though he's in such a situation, he's not inimical. He's still trying to give Krishna consciousness to these people through prasadam, by some transcendental message, by his exemplary behavior, by his rigid diet. People will naturally develop respect for us. So here in this verse, 103, after the conversation starts, Sanatana Goswami starts speaking. Now, he puts a straw between his teeth. What does that mean? It's like when in Indian tradition, if you put a straw between your teeth, that means you've practically assumed the position of an animal. I'm just like an animal. I'm trying to munch on some grass. Here I've got some grass between my teeth. Just like Nityananda Prabhu, when he went to preach with Haridas Thakur, he had straw between his teeth. And he approached the residents of Navadvip and begged with them, "Sir, you look so respectable. You're such a respectable person. Please, you chant Krishna's name. You got so many qualifications, but this is my humble appeal to you that you accomplished in so many ways. But if you can chant Krishna's name, it will become so wonderful." So this is Lord Nityananda, the Supreme Lord himself. So Sanatana Goswami had grass between his teeth, and he clasps onto Mahaprabhu's feet, and he says, of course, I know you all have already heard this verse, just give some background. Nicha jati nicha sangi patita adham kubishaya kupe padi gonainu janam. Sanatana Goswami said, "I was born in a low family, and my associates are all low-class men. I myself am fallen, am the lowest of men. Indeed, I have passed my whole life fallen in the well of sinful materialism. Apanara hita hita kichuna jani gramya vyavahare panditai satyamani." I do not know what is beneficial for me and what is detrimental. Nonetheless, in ordinary dealings, people consider me a learned scholar, and I'm also thinking of myself as such. Kripa kari yadi more kariya cha udhar apana kripate kaha kartavya amar. Out of your causeless mercy, you have delivered me from the materialistic path. Now by some causeless mercy, please tell me what my duty is. Keyami kene ama jareta patra iha nahi jani ke mane itahai. Who am I? Why do the threefold miseries always give me trouble? If I do not know this, how can I be benefited? So this is one of the favorite verses of Srila Prabhupada, by the way. Prabhupada has quoted this many times. Said this is the spirit of inquiry of a disciple. If you go to a spiritual master, in the same spirit of Sanatana Goswami, we should say, "My dear Guru Maharaj, who am I? I don't know really who am I. You know, people ask me, who am I? I say, I'm such and such. I'm a doctor. I'm a householder. I've got this. I got live at this address. I'm from this part of India. I'm that part of. I went to school that way. But who am I? I want to know, Guru Maharaj, who am I?" Then he says, "Why are the threefold miseries always harassing me? Even though I don't know, even though I don't go out of my way to get harassed, but I always get harassed by my mind, by others, by other living entities, by insects, by this, but my neighbor is giving me trouble, my boss is giving me trouble, and then there's always so many other type of harassment, I fall sick, My son is giving me a really hard time. You know, it's hot, it's cold, and I've got to work in the freezing temperatures. Even though I don't have all this, why do they come harassing me like this? I really do not know anything. So in this position, please explain to me how can I be benefited. Then Sanatana Goswami, which is today's verse, he says, Tadya sadhana tattva puschite najani kripakari sava tattva kaheta apani. Says, actually, I do not know how to inquire about the goal of life and the process for obtaining it. Be merciful upon me, please explain all this truth. So Sanatana Goswami has actually given us, by his personal example, no matter how qualified one is. Now, he was the minister for the Nawab Shah. And actually, the Nawab Shah considered him his own brother, because when Sanatana Goswami took leave from his work and he engaged some pandits in his house and listening to the Bhagavatam, the Nawab felt that he had lost one of his arms, because Sanatana Goswami was so capable and so intelligent in this matters of managing the Shah's, Nawab Shah's affairs. He could leave peacefully, Sanatana Goswami, and knew that everything would be taken care of in his kingdom, and he would go on to conquer other parts of India. And Sanatana Goswami was so highly regarded that the Nawab Hussain considered him his own brother. So when he came back, when he came to Sanatana's house, when he saw all this going on, and Sanatana Goswami had turned in a medical leave, and he was listening to the Brahmins chanting different Vedic mantras from the Srimad Bhagavatam, he said, "Why have you turned in medical leave? I don't see you, and nothing wrong with you physically." Then he tells, "You know, if my brother is not helping me, he addresses him as brother, how can I go about doing my normal business?" So he was extremely qualified, but Sanatana Goswami, who was the most favorite disciple of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu among the, all these disciples, among the Goswami, he takes on this role. Not takes on, he genuinely feels himself completely fallen, completely wretched, completely lowborn, an outcast. So even during when he was living in Puri, he would never go into the temple, even after the association of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He would actually walk and get darshan along the beach in the hot sand and take darshan of the chakra, because he felt himself totally unqualified to, because of his association, of the work he had done. So this is the mood of a Maha Bhagavat associate of Mahaprabhu. So sometimes we, with a little qualification, we feel that we are highly qualified, with so much abilities, you know, we can talk this part of the Gita, talk that part of the Bhagavat. We can give, we are preaching so nicely. But these are all examples that Mahaprabhu, what will attract really Mahaprabhu. So what really attracts Mahaprabhu is there in the Shikshashtaka, right? And Mahaprabhu personally has said in the Shikshashtaka how one can incessantly chant Krishna's name. What is the qualification? Trinada pisunichena tarorive sahisnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sada harihi. Of course, this is a very short verse, but really only the devotee of the highest order can follow this verse. So do we feel daily in our life lower than a blade of grass, lower than a straw in the street? Do we feel any time of the day Probably not. Whereas a pure devotee, a Mahabhagavat, he feels that at every moment of his life, that is lower than a blade of grass. So it gives us some understanding how far we are from that goal. Snatapi sunichena taroriva sahistuna. One should become more tolerant than the tree. Of course, now it's become very fashionable to cut down trees. Oh, I'm building my house here, I got this land, let me cut down this tree. You know, it's just an inert, you know, it's just a dumb living entity anyway, you know. What does the tree know about what I need? But Mahaprabhu uses the tree as an example. Very interesting. Taroriva sahisuna. He could have used many things as an example, but he uses the tree as an example. Because why? The tree just tolerates everything. That tolerates the heat, tolerates the cold, tolerates people, you know, punching nails through it. It tolerates people ripping its bark out. It tolerates people cutting its branches. Meanwhile, it's just giving its flowers and fruits. So it's a very, very instructive thing. And then ultimately, some people even cut down the trees and still it doesn't protest. So Prabhupada became very angry at one time. I think it was in Dallas. Some devotees had cut down some bush. And Prabhupada, because to make way, and Prabhupada said, you know, why did you cut down that bush? And, you know, in Bombay, Prabhupada made the devotees go through so much trouble just to save one tree. Because the tree was going to be in the way of the road. Prabhupada made the devotees and the city construct the road around a single tree. Who would have thought something like that? I mean, who would even want to do something like that? So we also have to be very careful. Trees are also living entities. They're given their prescribed role in this world. And we shouldn't, take liberty in thinking, oh, this is a low creature, you know, this is a, you know, doesn't matter. Let me do. So we cannot justify things like this. We need to be very careful. So Mahaprabhu gives the example of a tree, taroriva sahisnuna. And Sanatana Goswami was also so tolerant, just like a tree. Taroriva sahisnuna. Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadari. Amanina manadena. Amanina, that means one should never expect any respect for oneself. And one should be very, very liberal in giving respect to others. And in such a state of mind, one can incessantly chant the holy name of Krishna. So this behavior was personally practiced by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he went to the midst of the Varanasi sannyasis headed by Prakashananda Saraswati. He was the Supreme Lord, the highest scholar of, you know, he goes in their midst and he sits in a place where people will wash their feet, considered a dirty place. Mahaprabhu sits there in about 10,000 sannyasis all seated in a high seat. Mahaprabhu sits there and his humility immediately attracts everybody. So preacher, we have to be humble. And we may be very learned, we may be good preachers, but if you're not humble, we will not attract people to this Krishna consciousness movement. So we have to always think that I'm actually totally unqualified, but somehow by the grace of my spiritual master, I'm engaged in this preaching work, I'm engaged in this devotional service. It's not of any qualification on my own. It's simply I'm the recipient of some causeless mercy of the spiritual master, of the Vaishnavas, of Srila Prabhupada, that I'm engaged in this capacity. and if we always keep this mood within us, we'll always be very humble. The moment we think that actually we are the doers, I'm actually the qualified person, because I'm qualified, I'm doing this. No. At any point, once we think like that, immediately disqualifies us from Krishna's mercy. So the way we always remain qualified for Krishna's mercy is to consider ourselves as the most unqualified. So this is the achitya bhed bhed. Krishna gives us qualification when we feel ourselves utterly qualified. And the moment we think we are qualified, even though we may be qualified because of our we may be qualified, but the moment we think we are qualified, immediately we become disqualified. So this is a secret of a preacher. At every point in life, we should think we are totally unqualified, we are totally incapable, we are totally foolish. But somehow, by some amazing mercy and compassion and fortune, that I'm allowed to do this. Okay? Even Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, during one of his famous Vyasa Puja address, he was saying, I am most arrogant to sit here and receive this worship like a brute. He considered himself that, all these people are worshiping me. I'm so arrogant here, and I've got the audacity to sit here and receive their worship. But he said, I have to do this because it's my duty to receive worship from you. Because he has taken the position of the acharya. So this is his mood. Because I've taken this, I have to sit here like an arrogant person, arrogant, whatever, and just take all this. Wow, how embarrassing is this? This was his mood. And Prabhupada once, he was asked, so by one some crazy guy, so are you the first class person? You're talking about this third class people, these animals, and what is this? What about you? Are you the first class person? Prabhupada said, actually, I'm a fifth class person. And you can see when Prabhupada said it, he really meant it within himself that he was fifth class. But he was even higher than the first class. He was the transcendental acharya of all the first class devotees. He was Prabhupada, whose feet where many Prabhus were sitting. So this is the mood of a devotee. And to receive Krishna's mercy, to receive Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy and the mercy of the Guru Parampara, one has to bear in mind that I am just a complete fool. Somehow by some extraordinary mercy and fortune, I'm somehow given this opportunity. I don't know why, but this is simply called causeless. So therefore, I always have to be mindful of my fallen position. I always have to be mindful of the devotees who have given me this mercy. I've always have to be mindful that I always have to never forget of my fallen condition. I always have to be mindful to always be very tolerant. Always, because people have tolerated me so much in my life with all my obnoxious personality and my obnoxious, my offensive mentality. So many people have tolerated me. So many devotees have tolerated me. My spiritual master has tolerated so much of my nonsense. For me to now go and practice some tolerance is nothing compared to how much people have had to tolerate me. So devotees should think like that. And then we should always be very, very respectful, give respect to others, even seemingly somebody who's very unqualified, very fallen. when we give respect to them, they naturally feel very obliged. When you respect somebody, they become obliged to listen to you. So it's just like a father, he may have many children, but this child, even though he may have many disqualifications, but he is always coming to touch the father's feet, he's always very respectful, the father will develop a certain, the father will tend to favor this son, rather than a son who may be very qualified, but he's so arrogant and so offensive and so disrespectful. So they are all his children, but the father will be more inclined to favor the child who is humble and who is respectful. So similarly, when we go out to preach, we cannot judge people according to their, how they dress, you know, how much money they have, you know, what position they are. We should actually be humble towards everyone, respectful towards everyone. And these are qualities everybody is attracted in this world. Even if you go in front of Donald Trump and you're very humble to him, he'll be attracted, even though he's not the most humble person, but he will be attracted. So, of course, nowadays it's very fashionable to become arrogant and blow your own horn and publicize your own good qualities. But these are all not very beneficial in the spiritual realm. In the spiritual realm, it's always true. One should follow. One should imbibe these qualities. Titikshava, Karunika, Surida, Sarvadehina, Ajata, Shatru, Shantraha, Sadhava, Sadhu, Bhushana, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Titikshava, one should be so tolerant. Karunika, one should be very compassionate. Surida, Sarvadehina, one should befriend all persons, not only persons, all living entities. Surida Sarvadehinam. Anybody who's embodied in any material body, we should become their friend. Tikshavakarimika Surida Sarvi Surida Sarvadehinam. Ajata Satru. One should never feel that one should be inimical to others. One should not have any enemies. Other people may see you as an enemy, but you should never point, at any point a devotee should see, oh, this is my enemy. No. Ajata Shatru, Santaha, one should always peaceful. Sadhava, this Sadhava, Sadhu Bhushana, this one should be, these are the ornaments of a saintly person. Of course, the Chaitanya Charitam talks about the 26 qualities of the devotee, but the Srimad Bhagavatam talks about these qualities about a saintly person. So we should imbibe these qualities. But at the same time, we should never compromise on our principles. We should be bold in our preaching. So there's not a dichotomy. When we are bold in our preaching, at the same time, we have all these qualities. There's no dichotomy. That sometimes people think, hey, sadhu means he has to be very meek and humble. His preaching should be very gentle. No. There's nothing wrong with boldly preaching our philosophy and having these qualities. If somebody derides Krishna and his devotees, we should get very angry. If somebody attacks a devotee, we should protect that devotee. Yeah, like Arjuna, right? He's considered a saintly person. Why? Even he's fighting in the battlefield, but he's considered a great devotee. Now Arjuna is shooting arrows and killing all kind of big personalities, but he's glorified. Why? Because within himself, he didn't expect any glory. He was simply doing it to protect Krishna's, to fulfill Krishna's desire. So sometimes as devotees, we have to preach heavily in the name of upkeeping religious principles, spiritual tradition, but internally we should always feel this is somehow Krishna's mercy. I'm able to do this. It's not because of my own ability. Just like sometimes people think humility means you go around paying obeisances to everybody. That is not humility. Humility means following the orders of the spiritual master. No matter what it is, that is humility. Okay, my spiritual master wants me to talk boldly. I will talk boldly. That is your humility. If my spiritual master wants me to clean the toilet, I will clean the toilet. So that is my humility. If my spiritual master wants me to go and lead kirtan in front of 10,000 people, that is my humility. If my spiritual master wants me to talk about some great nonsense philosophy and destroy that philosophy in front of highly learned people, I will do that. That is my humility. All right, I think I've spoken sufficient. An arrogant person like me have spoken on humility. How embarrassing. So we'll stop here. Any questions, comments, please?
Hare Krishna, I'll unmute you. And you can go ahead with questions.
Any questions, any comments?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Srila Prabhupada and Srila Gurudev. Pleasure, Sri Radhesham. Wonderful class. Thank you very much for your assistance.
Thank you, Hare Krishna. Who is this?
Brinda Gupta from Atlanta, Paniyati Dham.
How many devotees are in this call now? Can I know, please?
We have somewhere between 12 devotees right now.
Okay, please, I would like to have some critique on my class. Say something, Prabhu? Can somebody correct me if I say something wrong?
Yes, Prabhu. Anyone has any questions or comments, please go ahead.
Okay.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much, Prabhu. Thank you so much for such a wonderful class. And the most important quality that that is applicable for me also, so that is humility. So when we will hear more and more about this, so I think we can develop this quality. So thank you so much, Prabhuji.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, we need to hear about this thing. And hearing is very important. Also, we need to associate also with these devotees who have such qualities. And that is will be very, very effective. Sometimes when we hear, it may look for us, this is Sanatana Goswami. How can I become like Sanatana Goswami? It's practically not possible. So, yes. But when we associate with devotees who have embodied the qualities of Sanatana Goswami, then we very quickly can develop those qualities.
Thank you, Prabhu.
So, hi, Krishna.
So, Hare Krishna. So, who is this?
Oh, this is Kriti Vilas.
Yes, Mataji.
So, I really love the class, Prabhu. There are so many interesting points that you made. Like when you were talking about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes to in this place where people would wash their feet in the midst of sannyasis. The way you said, the humility is very attractive and it's a great weapon. I mean, that is so true. Because when people speak or when they do something, it's not very impressive. But when people are truly humble, it really melts our hearts. That's something that is very beautiful that you said. And one more thing that is applicable to me was like when you said that so many people have tolerated me, including my spiritual master, so what's the harm in tolerating others? But I think that is a very important thing for us to think on a practical basis. Like when we are sometimes getting upset with people around us, if they are devotees, I think this is a very good meditation to have. So many of them have tolerated me, so why can't I tolerate people? What's wrong?
Yeah, yeah.
Why am I so insensitive?
Hari Hari Bol.
That is so true. We really face these circumstances on a day-to-day basis, and this is a very good way of keeping track on how we perceive friendships with other devotees. And also towards the end, you were telling how when you're giving respect, the person becomes obliged. That is again so true. Just by offering our obeisances, doesn't matter who it is, just have a respectful attitude, really impresses on people. It's not like we have to do it artificially, but you genuinely, when we show respect, I mean, people become very obliged. So these are really nice takeaway points, and I'm so grateful that you said these things. And about Ajatashatru, that is also something very important that we have to implement. I often think it's okay if others think of you as an enemy, but you should really not think of anyone as your enemy. So, beautiful points, Prabhu.
Actually, when we think somebody as our enemy, we are becoming inimical to Krishna. Because Krishna is seated in their heart. And also, I mean, the Paramatma is seated in their heart, and Paramatma, and that living entity is also connected with Paramatma. He's a part and parcel of Krishna. So we develop an inimical attitude towards somebody, that means we have actually developed some animosity towards Krishna. So therefore, the Goswamis are glorified as Dhira Adhira Janapriyo. The Goswamis were so liked by those people who were Dhira and also those who were Adhira. They never had any enemies. So therefore, they could do what they were meant to do. They could fulfill the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because they never saw anybody as inimical. Just like when Ambarish Maharaj was attacked by Durvasa Muni like that, he just never showed any animosity towards him. Yeah. He just fixed his mind on Krishna. So these are all very, very valuable, very instructive lessons. We, in the course of preaching, we will come against, meet devotees who may display some animosity to us, who may try to be political against us. But we should never at any point in time develop an animosity towards that person. Even though you're completely faultless, somebody may make a lot of accusations towards you. The way we should see it is, Krishna is wanting me to learn something from this. That's how we should see it. When we have such an attitude, automatically we can take something negative and make it positive for our own improvement. So it's something which is very, very instructive. I think the moment we start thinking somebody is my enemy, somebody is working against me, I need to give tit for tat, that's not going to really help spiritual life. Yeah.
Very beautiful, Prabhu. Thank you so much. Yeah. Makes us think a lot. Very true. Thank you, Prabhu.
You know, all this could be very... I mean, these are all very lofty ideals, but we have to start somewhere. It may look like impossible, but we have to start somewhere in our life. Next time, we can start by this. When we're walking, if there's some ants, we can avoid stepping on the ants. So we can start somewhere. We do take some small steps. If there's some bug in the house, a cockroach, we don't snap it, with a mat and kill it. We can try to pick it up and throw it outside of the house. Simple things like that will help us develop appreciation for all living entities. Sometimes we never give much thought to trees and this, but you never know. The tree in the temple may be a kalpa vriksha, and during a festival, you're driving a nail to hang some poster in that tree. So it could be a big offense. You know, so we have to be friendly to every living entity. Just like Mahaprabhu's, you know, third sloka of the Shikshashtakam. Now, that is only a very, that is a preliminary stage. That is a prerequisite stage. Mahaprabhu's Shikshashtaka takes us step by step. First, he talks about, he glorifies the holy name of Krishna. He glorifies the Sankirtan of Krishna. Then he says, your name is all full of so much potency. There's no hard and fast rules. But I'm so unfortunate, my Lord, I don't have any attraction. First of all, he expresses his disqualification. He glorifies the name of Krishna. Then he expresses his disqualification. Then he says, actually, for me to chant this holy name, I have to imbibe all these qualities. Then he talks about not wanting name, wanting fame, not wanting any followers. So this is actually a progressive stage in our spiritual life. So if we're not at that position, at least we should first start by glorifying Krishna's name. And then naturally we realize we are so unqualified, we don't have attraction. And then in that mood, we'll develop humility, we'll develop tolerance, we'll become respectful, we won't expect respect. And then once we have that mentality, naturally we will become unattracted to all things which are not helping me in Krishna service.
Wow. Yes, so. Thank you. Thank you so much.
So this class is supposed to end at 11 o'clock my time, right? It's supposed to end in 4 minutes time. If there's any, I really feel very fortunate. I feel that Krishna has given me this opportunity, my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, to speak about these things because for my own purification. And this is most, I feel myself very fortunate you all have engaged me in such a capacity. And if there's anything y'all want to comment in private, which you may feel was inappropriate in my class, please you can individually call me and discuss that with me. I'll be very, very happy to receive any guidance, any criticism. I'll take that as coming from Krishna.
Anyone has any questions or comments?
Prabhuji, 100 pranam, Hari Bol, all best to Prabhupada
Gurudev. Thank you all very much. So if there's nothing more, can we end the class here?
Okay.
Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki, Shri Prabhupada ki.